Welcome back to Rude Dude.
Welcome to the Rude Dude Recovery Podcast with your host and resident wet brains, Cam and Hen, two dudes navigating the waves of wellness. Thanks for being here. This week, the dudes sit down with Paul Levitin, a personal trainer turned behavior coach who now strives to make change easy. We dive deep into why people struggle with making changes, how to take action on changes you'd like to make, neuroplasticity, and why the word should needs to leave your vocabulary. Please enjoy Season 2, Episode 6 of the Rude Dude Recovery Pod. I'm ringing down, 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 and if I were you, where are you? I'd lay low. Welcome back to the Rude Podcast, the show that puts some pep in your step, takes some weight off your plate, and reminds you that haters gonna hate, and you are loved. We are your hosts and favorite recovering alcoholics, Cam and Hen. How you doing there, Cream?
You know what, man? That was a good intro. I like it. Hey, for our dedicated listeners, that was the second take. The first one was real delicious. I'm doing all right, man. I think we're all coming down with the vaunted case of pink eye again around here in the Kriegren layer, dude. Ashley has
quit
pink eye.
Farting on your kids,
man. I'll tell you what, I got to talk to my parents because I don't understand. If I need to understand if I was sick like this all the time, because it's the craziest thing I've ever seen in my entire life, man. But aside from that, we're doing all right, bro. How are you today?
I am doing really well, man. I'm feeling good. And you may have noticed it in the notes. I wanted to, in this intro, make a quick announcement that your winter blues can be chased away. For those of us like me and almost everyone that get the seasonal depression, the weather is changing, The plants are blooming, softball is beginning, ooh, we've got basketball playoffs, okay? Mm-hmm. So for all of you that have been stuck inside in the cold and the gray, hating life and wishing you could go outside and frolic in a field, that time is now. And I had the best day the other day. You know, I got to work, it was warm, what else did I do? It was just the best day. And part of it, we went outside and we played softball. We had a scrimmage and
there you go.
I was with the fellas. I grilled. Mm. I've been grilling again. I mean, I just want to say thank you, summertime, for coming back. And if you've been bumming, stop that, because it's time for sunshine and happiness.
It is elite, dude. It is elite. Did we have the shirt off while we were grilling?
Absolutely.
Dude, that's fantastic. They had the tit out and everything. We love it. We love to see it. All right, man, what are we getting into this week?
Well, today we have a very special guest. As we teased last week, this is a guy that I met through some podcast groups that I'm in. He has a background in fitness and nutrition, and his podcast is called Change Made Easy. Some really good stuff. I've been listening to it. He is basically a podcaster, motivational coach, and he'll tell us more about it, but a really exciting guest that's going to help us with some to figure out whatever it is that you want to do, how you can achieve it. So we give you Paul Levitin.
How's it going, man?
It's going amazing. Thank you for having me, gentlemen. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome, man. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Right on.
Did I describe who you are fairly well?
Yeah, I think so. It's always lovely to try to sum yourself up in a two sentence little blurb, but
from a stranger.
Right. But that is about it. I think you hit the nail on the head.
So give us just quickly a brief background of how you got where you are now.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, my podcast is called Change Made Easy. So I have a podcast, I do public speaking, I write, and all in the same regard of Change Made Easy. And the tagline is changing your habits, routines, and behaviors is hard. We make it easy. And that's my whole shtick, my whole spiel is just like, how do we make whatever your thing is easy? Whether it's drinking less is a big one, but also eating less, but also exercising more, sleeping more, being more present with your partner, working more, working less, whatever. There's a million things that we want to do that we are not doing. And all of those things hinge on one word, which is change. So how I got here was I started as a personal trainer, as you said. Personal training led me to nutrition. And it's like when you're a personal trainer and then it's like, okay, now I got the nutrition. It's like that's the whole puzzle right there, right? It's like that's it. I'm supposed to be able to help everyone now because I can tell them how to exercise. And we all know that abs are made in the kitchen. So I can also tell them how to eat and like, boom, I cracked the code. And what I found was that it is not how it works. And we can tell people what to do, and most people know what to do. So that's what got me very interested in behavior change. And from behavior change, I started to study psychology and concepts that maybe you're familiar with, things like motivational interviewing and cognitive behavioral therapy. And a lot of these things actually were studied in alcoholics because that's one of the most impactful ways that we can study behavior. But I studied all of this to bring it back to my fitness career. As I was working with as a personal trainer, the whole point was like, okay, like how do I help my clients more? But as I went down that road, I started to be less enthusiastic about the fitness side of things and more enthusiastic about the behavioral side of things, because I realized like the fitness side and the nutrition side is pretty easy. Like I could tell you in the next 30 seconds how to eat and exercise for the rest of your life. It's like, you know, eat more fruits, eat more vegetables.
That's the execution.
Yeah, take 10,000 steps and work out 3 times a week. There you go. You know, like now it's like, who's doing that? Right. So like, exactly. It's the execution. How do you get the people to do the thing? And then more interesting to me is like, how do people not do a thing that they say that they want to do? Mm-hmm. Right. I want to go on this diet. People will pay me to tell them a diet and then not do it. People will say that alcohol is literally killing me and destroying my family and then go to a liquor store. It's like there's a disconnect there that's just very interesting to me about the human condition. Mm-hmm. And so I became licensed, board licensed, did a whole bunch of things to continue my education in that field. And now I just try to help people make that connection and make it easier so it doesn't take them 10 years like it took me.
I think that's awesome, man. I think it's a pretty cool evolution on how, you know, simple fitness, you know, mentoring, not saying that's necessarily simple, but, you know, hey, eat like you said, eat this food, work out like this, yada, 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 drink enough water and try to get 7 to 8 hours of sleep. You know, I like that you decided to dive into the more complex issues here, because there's a lot to that when it comes to humans not wanting to do things that they're told to do or that they necessarily want to do. Like, I think there was a study, I don't know the exact percentage, but people will go to the doctor and get prescribed a medication and then 90, I think it was a very high percentage. They'll go home and just not take the medication. Like they know better or something like that. And I think it's so interesting how humans function like that. And you have a bunch of questions on here. What was the first one you wanted to ask, brother?
Yeah. I also love your evolution of like, I'm helping people do this, then I'm helping them do that. But what do they really need? And what they mm-hmm. really need is to be able to follow through with it, whatever it is. So, and like I said, I've been listening to your stuff and we'll get into it. But before we do that, I believe in your messaging, when you and I were messaging, you said that you quit drinking. And I wanted to hear a little bit about your story as far as that goes, your relationship with alcohol and what made you want to stop drinking.
Yeah, for sure. So just real quick, that's what you were referring to before, that study about like the pills. This is something that I learned. This is one of the things that put me on this path. I actually learned about this in my original nutrition coaching. Mm-hmm. So there's a company called Precision Nutrition, and they certify nutrition coaches. And in that training, when I was learning to be a nutrition coach, this is what they taught. They said exactly that. People will always say, like, the people will joke, right? It's like, there's no magic pill, right? There's no magic pill for fitness. There's no magic pill for diet. Like, you got to do the work. And yet you see a study that says that people will have life-saving medicine and 50% of people won't take that medicine. Yeah. So even when there is a magic pill,
yeah,
50% of people don't take it. Right. Same thing with physical therapy, right? People will, it's a wild number. It's like 67% of people who get prescribed physical therapy for an injury or something stop going after like the first one. It's like, this thing is literally supposed to make you better. Like, and you're just like, no thanks. So yeah, that's exactly the stuff I'm super interested in. In terms of drinking, I don't say that I'm sober. I say sober adjacent. So like, I'm not sober in the sense that like I count my days, but I mean, and I will allow myself to drink. I don't have like a hard line like that. But if I drink twice a year, two or three drinks, like that's a lot for me. Mm-hmm. Coming from 10 years ago, I was drinking twice a day, 20 or 30 drinks. Like it wasn't anything that, I mean, like looking back now, it's like knowing the symptom, or not the symptoms, the definition of what alcoholism now is, like I would consider myself, I had an alcohol problem. At that time, I didn't look at it that way. I was just having fun. I was partying a lot. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, in my early 20s, I had a decent job that was making me a lot of money. I had no responsibilities. So all of my free time went to drinking and partying. And it was, you know, I was living in New York City. So it was going out in the city. It was Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday day party, Sunday fun day, you know, and like, okay, would then be really hungover Monday through Thursday to make enough money to do it all over again. Mm-hmm. And that was fine for a long time for me. And what changed was that was like 23 to 28 after I graduated college, and before 23 also, because all through college I was doing the same thing. But after I graduated college, I got a job as a personal trainer when I was like 22, 23. And I just distinctly remember 23 to 28 because it was like 5 years had passed in that job. And I remember thinking like 5 years just passed and I'm doing the exact same thing that I was doing 5 years ago, which is just drinking more, trying to pick up girls, like being really hungover, sneaking into work, smelling like alcohol, like, and it's like, okay, now if I flip that, what does that mean is going to happen 5 years from now? It means I'm going to be 33 doing the exact same thing. And like, that doesn't seem very cool. Mm-hmm. And then also by a confluence of events, my nephew was also born right around that time. So it was just kind of this like, come to Jesus moment where I was just like, okay, like one, it gave me something bigger than myself to live for, because this was like the first thing that outside of me that I was like, oh, okay, like this little creature, you know, like I have a very small family, like we're all very tight. And I was like, okay, like I'm sure having a son would or a daughter would have been even more impactful. But for me, it was a nephew. And I was like, okay, this is crazy. And then I had that like flashback versus flash forward moment. And then also at that time, I was introduced to personal development. So, and I had been in the gym learning a lot about fitness and nutrition and stuff like that. But someone handed me the book Think and Grow Rich. Mm-hmm. And Think and Grow Rich is like old school personal development, like the 1920s mm-hmm. it was oh, written. Yeah. And I just like all three of those things happened within like a month of each other. And it was just like, I just stopped. Like, I was just like, okay, like I'm going to change. I'm going to stop for everything. It was more of a like, for right now, like I have better things to do with my time. And that's a big part of it when people ask me about, you know, especially like now people who know me don't even know that old Paul existed. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my friends from college, my friends who I used to work with and things like that, like they do. And they're like, oh, like, how did you make that change? Or friends who ask, you know, I've had people want to coach on this thing. And it's like, for me, it's always about replacing, right? It's like so much of my time and energy and attention was spent on drinking and partying. I couldn't have never done it if it was just like, I'm going to cut all of that out. The reality was the reason I was able to do it successfully was because one, I had a bigger vision of like what I wanted, but also because I had better things to replace it with. Like I was very fortunate in the sense that I was like working in the fitness industry mm-hmm. and I had gym friends and I had people who wanted to get up and go on hikes and stuff in the morning. So if I didn't go out on a Friday night, I could go on Saturday morning for a early morning workout or something like that. So I had to fill that void and I did it very quickly and just kind of flipped the switch and it all kind of just fell into place in the right way and right time. So, you know, again, I say that I'm lucky because all of those things had to happen at the exact same time, at the exact same way. And again, I had to be doing what I was. If I was working an office job, that wouldn't have been the same because I wouldn't have been surrounded by the people I needed to be surrounded by. So it's not like, oh, I just like willpower or something like that. I was lucky, but, you know, that's just how it is sometimes.
I always find it so interesting how people, now us in the recovery community, call you a normie, right? Because you're able to just do what you just described, and I find it so interesting because, you know, it sounds like you were really tying it on during your early 20s. You know, Hen and I were doing the same thing during that time, but the problem was that after we hit that age of 28, we just decided to keep going, right? The question I have for you, really quick, is: did you find any struggle in breaking that cycle? Was there like any sort of craving or anything like that? Or were you able to just be done with it? Because I think that's super interesting to me.
Yeah. So it really was, there never was, but that's because for me, it was never about drinking. Okay. It was about girls. Like that was, it was really about like drinking was just a conduit to go out at night and party and talk to girls. If anything, I was probably more of a sex addict than anything else. And drinking was just like the thing that the social lubricant the conduit, that I needed.
Yeah.
Yeah. The conduit for that. So exactly. Once I decided that like, that was something that I wasn't like, cause again, it was a kind of a same thing with that. It was like, you know, at a certain point, you know, when I was in my young early 20s, it was like, going to a bar and picking up a random girl and going home with her was like, that was the peak of what I thought human existence was.
Yeah.
Like that's what you live for. So
in your 20s, that is the peak, early 20s.
So that I could text my friends and be like, hey, yeah, you remember that girl? Like, yep, I'm at her place right now or whatever.
Yeah.
But then as I got older, my friends started getting married. My friends started having kids. And then I'm still living that life where I'm just like, it's not cool anymore. And no one wants to hear it. So now I'm waking up at some girl's house and I'm like, silently taking the train home at 8 o'clock in the morning from Queens to Brooklyn. And it's like,
the train of shame.
Right. And I'm hungover. And like, it's just like, I was just like, okay, like this just,
and no
this
one's just, even excited right, about exactly. it when you text yeah. them anymore. They're like, cool, bro, grow up. Right, I just like right. watched my daughter at a, right. at a play the piano at a recital and it was awesome.
Yeah. So that's the thing. It was never a substance thing for me. I've been very like fortunate in that regard too, because my sister is an addict and she had been an NA for a long time. So I know that side of things, but like, I've tried every substance under the sun and like I can pick it up and put it down very easily. So again, like I'm just fortunate. My dad was an addict. My sister is an addict. Like I'm just fortunate that I didn't get that gene,
yeah.
you know, but for me, it was never really about the drinking so much as it was like the other stuff that came with drinking.
Makes sense.
I think there's a couple interesting things in there. And one of the things that it seems like you were ahead of the curve on this, but there's kind of a fad now of people who are quitting drinking just because they don't want to, or because they know it's bad for them, or because, which I'm not like putting it down at all. I think it's awesome. And I think it's a good point to make with someone like you. You didn't necessarily have like a major problem where you were going to jail and hurting your family and with major consequences. I don't know. I could be wrong, but it wasn't necessarily on mine and Cameron's level, but you still were able to be like, you know what, this doesn't really suit me and this doesn't fit into what I'm trying to do. And I think that's important because we have listeners who are not alcoholics or addicts necessarily, but you don't have to hit a bottom to want to not drink as much, or you don't have to go as low as we went. You can just decide because, you know, you realize you don't like how you feel or you have other stuff to do. And the other thing that I thought of was this quote, because you said you had realized 5 years had gone by. Mm-hmm. It was something like, whether you do or you don't, in 4 years, 4 years will have gone by. Okay. And like, I wish I would have listened to that more, because like I had the opportunity to go back to school when I came to West Virginia. It's been 6 years. I would have finished college by now, you know? So I think that's important. I love that you mentioned the time and to see it from that aspect of, if you have plans and goals and no matter when, how long you're worried about it taking, like time's going to keep going by either way.
I think that one of my superpowers is just like, I'm very observant, right? Like I like to like take a step back and like, I'm like a video game, like watching over the whole thing. And being a personal trainer, it led to that very well, meaning that I could see things play out on a bigger scale because I was working with hundreds of people, you know, over the course of my career. So I saw what it was for people who I had 40-year-old clients, 50-year-old clients who, you know, and I saw, oh, what's that life like when they just put themselves all into their work and they don't have any self-care and they drink every weekend and like they come to me at 45 years old and they can barely sit down and stand up without their knees hurting. And then I had 60-year-old clients who were like, yep, I stopped drinking at 20. And like, I just, you know, like, and they just lived. And I'm like, okay, like I just started to see a picture and being that, again, you know, again, I can never overstate how important it was that I was in the health field. So I was also studying the literal impacts of this thing. Like I'm teaching people about nutrition and it's just like, well, I know that you want to lose weight. So not to say that you can't lose weight while drinking alcohol, but it's going to make it much harder. And alcohol is bad for you. And it is a literal poison. And here's all these bad things about it. But then going off on the weekend and getting hammered anyway. But I'm like, that's for you. That's not for me. You know, and again, I did that for a while, but for me, it really comes down to, and this is something I talk about in my podcast and my anyone that I work with, it's like, are you running away from something or are you running towards something? And I think that running away from something that motivation only works when you absolutely have to. So that's why it's hitting rock bottom, right? It's like, I will quit drinking when I hit rock bottom because I have to. And that's why most people have to hit rock bottom multiple times, right? If it was really rock bottom, that first time would have worked. But the reality is that it even that doesn't stick. For me, a much more powerful motivation is like, what am I looking towards? Like, it's not about like how bad my life is that I have to get away from that. It's like how good my life could be. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm about to be 35 and I see a lot of guys like my age and stuff. They're posting like these pictures on Instagram, like getting back to the gym. Like, I'm, you know, I've just decided, like, I caught this picture of myself in the mirror, and they'll post like a picture of them all frumpy. They're like, I caught this picture and I was just like, I'm not going to be that guy anymore. And I'm hitting the gym, blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, or I could be like, yeah, I'm going to be the best shape of my life at 35 because I love myself, because I want to be the best version of myself. And it's like, I don't have to do it from a place of like, oh, I hate the guy I used to be, or I hate this or that. It's just like that. I think that negativity is like rocket fuel. Yeah. It burns very hard and it burns very bright, but rocket fuel also burns out very quickly. Mm-hmm. Where it's like positivity is like good barbecue. It's like low and slow. You know, it's not going to be the thing that launches you to the moon, but it will be the thing that's still going forever and ever and ever. And to me, that's much more important.
I love that, man. And you probably haven't heard, but I talk about on here all the time, working out is a huge part of my program, is in what I do to keep myself clean and keep myself healthy. And like you said, there's so much more to it than simply like, I want to have big muscles. The endorphins that I get, like one of my things that I talk about on here is I always work out before we record because I have more energy. I feel better. The recordings are better. I've done it both ways and I always feel better when I get a workout in first. But there's just so many benefits to it. Yeah, it's just something that's really important to me too. So I totally get that. Cameron, you had something on here.
I'll ask one of yours. What is the basis of motivation? Is it intrinsic or extrinsic?
First, I mean, you know, there's just to break down for people listening, right? It's like intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. So intrinsic motivation is motivation that comes from inside of you, and extrinsic motivation is motivation that's outside of you, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not really what motivation is, because both of those things can be motivation. The question is really like, which motivation is quote unquote better, right? Which one is going to work more, right? And for that, I mean, studies have shown us it's intrinsic motivation, which is kind of what I was saying about running away from versus running towards. But it's also, it can be all positive or all negative, because so you could say, I want to lose weight because I want to look better on the beach. That would be extrinsic motivation, because it's looking at how other people are going to look at me. How are other people going to perceive me? I want to lose weight because I know that I will feel better and have a higher quality of life when my knees don't hurt. That would be more of an intrinsic motivation. And that has been shown to be more impactful because, and the reality is, and this is why, you know, my whole thing is change made easy, is change is hard. And when shit hits the fan, and it always will hit the fan, you're going to try to quit. That's just human nature. So when it is an extrinsic motivator, something outside of yourself, those are much easier to shake off. You go, yeah, I want to lose weight to be sexy on the beach this summer. And then you start to realize losing weight is hard. And you go, fuck it, I'll wear a t-shirt. You know, like it crumbles very quickly under the pressure of life. And life always is going to put pressure on you. So whenever you're trying to do it, like even for something that's good, right? I'm going to quit drinking because my mom, it's killing my mom. It's just not good enough, because the reality is, if you're an addict and you're really in it, you're going to go, man, fuck that. My mom is going to die someday anyway. And you're just going to keep drinking. You know, like the only way we change is when we are doing it for ourselves. And this is how motivation works.
Very true of addicts.
And this for anyone, this is how motivation works. You cannot make someone else do something. Right. This is what I had to learn as a personal trainer. I referenced motivational interviewing before. So motivational interviewing is a school of talk therapy that was actually discovered or created when working with addicts. Yes. And what they learned was that you can't force someone to do anything. And so like back in the day, in like the 50s, 60s, 70s, before AA and stuff like that, like if someone was an addict, a drug addict or an alcoholic, they would literally send them to jail. They would say, hey, you better shape up, or we're going to put you in a jail or in an insane asylum, trying to force them to quit. And what they found was that just didn't work. And then motivational interviewing became like, okay, like we understand that probably someone who's destroying their life with drugs and alcohol, they probably know that they're destroying their life. They don't need someone to wag their finger at them and tell them bad, you dumb. What they need is someone to help support them and help them get to the root cause of why are they not doing the thing that they say they want to do. So motivational interviewing is a style of like talk therapy where like you talk to someone and help them come to that conclusion for them. Mm-hmm. It's like inception, mm-hmm. because me telling you, hey, you really need to lose weight. It might be true. Like, hey, if you're 100 pounds overweight, you're going to live less time. You're not going to be able to be there for your kid's graduation. I know that's very important to you. That is true. But that means much less than if I have a conversation with you and I go, what do you think are going to be the consequences of you not losing this weight? And you go, I don't know. People might think I'm fat. I'm like, oh, well, does that bother you? Well, yeah, I mean, it kind of bothers me. Okay, but what else? Well, I guess, you know, my doctor said that my dad had a heart attack at 55 and I'm 49. So I guess my kid is graduating and they get there themselves and they go, well, I guess if I don't start losing this weight now, there's a good chance I won't be around for my kid when they graduate high school. And like, that is much more impactful. We got to the same place, but it wasn't me telling them what to do. It was them getting there themselves. And that's how motivation works. It has to come from inside you. You already know, you've heard from other people, right? How many people smoke cigarettes? Everyone knows cigarettes are bad at this point. Like there's no one, oh my gosh, cigarettes cause cancer. Like I didn't know that. Like that's not a thing, you know? And yet people still smoke cigarettes. So it's like, you will say like, oh, Aunt Sally's here. She's smoking again. Like you'll, and like people will get mad at them. It's like nothing that you can tell that person is going to make them want to quit. They'll quit when they want to quit.
First off, motivational interviewing is something I've worked in treatment centers before, and that's the staple, man. That's the go-to when talking with addicts. So, Henry, you've been motivationally interviewed multiple times, brother. That's the way to get it, and it is a very effective way of getting you.
I've also done cognitive behavior mm-hmm. therapy as well.
I'm a big fan of ACT, acceptance. Mm-hmm. It's the gold standard, right? And it's because of what you just said, the intrinsic desire, right? You have to want it for yourself. Truer words couldn't be spoken in the recovery community. How many times did everybody try to convince me and Henry and everybody else that I had to quit drinking because I was going to jail and everybody hated me and blah, 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 blah. That all made me feel bad about myself, but but that wasn't changing anything. It wasn't. I didn't care. I cared, but I didn't. And then there was that motivation from inside, which is just what you just said, that is so much more powerful, that actually flips that switch when you decide that I want to do it for myself. And I always call it, we call it in the program, a spiritual awakening. And I really can't describe it as anything more than that, because something has to flip for you to make that decision, to make that hard change. And so I think it's incredible that it happened sometimes randomly. It happened for me randomly. Yes, there were outside forces at play, but you know, there were many moments where people be like, oh, that's got to be his rock bottom. Well, no, it wasn't. Oh, that's got to be it. He's definitely going to get sober now. Nope, that wasn't it. Oh, yep, here's another one. Nope, not it. And lo and behold, it's a girlfriend I had leaving me. You know what I mean? And I had plenty of girlfriends leave me during my drinking career, and it wasn't the end of the world. Long story short, man, it comes from inside. You're 100% right about that. And the motivational interviewing, that's a good piece, man. Yeah, it's sad that they used to send all those alcoholics to the insane asylum in jail, man. I right. think it's a really disservice. I think it's great that humanity has come this far to actually help people like Hen and I.
Yeah, and I was going to say, one of the things that's interesting about that intrinsic motivation, and this will lead me to my next question, but for me, I wasn't able to get clean until I went to a 6-month rehab. So I was in a bubble for 6 months. And what came with that was experiencing the other side, experiencing the good life, experiencing waking up not hungover, my brain starting to function better, feeling better, my physical health coming around. I got to experience for a good amount of time what it feels like to not be fucked up every day and to not feel like shit every day and all that. And that was part of what it took for me. But what I was going to ask you is, we were recently on here, Cameron mentioned...
Are you talking about Huberman?
Yeah. Talking about change and how difficult it is for people, but how incredible what addicts do is, because they make a very a very huge change in a very short amount of time, unlike what hardly anyone is able to do. So I wondered if you had some commentary on that, because it is a very interesting phenomenon that we can just change our, I mean, not everybody, and it's very hard to do, but a lot of us change our lives, and unlike, you know, most people are ever willing to do.
Yeah, 100%. The thing is that it's almost like impossible for people to change when the stakes are too low. That's the thing. Like, most of the change people are struggle with are low stakes change, right? I want to lose weight. What happens if you don't lose weight? I'll just be fat. I want to stop scrolling so much. I want to go to the gym more. It's like all of these things. It's like addiction is life or death. That's what I'm saying. Like, you have to hit rock bottom and then hit rock bottom again and hit every branch on the way down. And then still some people don't do it, but the people who do, do. And that's the thing, is like, really aggressive change can only happen when you absolutely have to. Right? So say, take someone who's a 3-pack-a-day smoker, and then she becomes pregnant. That day she quits smoking, right? She smoked 3 packs a day for the last 20 years, mm-hmm. but the day she finds out she's pregnant, she never touches it again. So we know that these things can be changed, as embedded in us as they are. There are always ways to snap out of it super quickly, right? Like I said, my nephew, a lot of times it's something like that. It's that come to Jesus moment of having a kid, finding out your wife is going to have a kid. You almost got fired and this is your last chance. Like, it usually is some type of moment like that, but there's a special thing with addicts specifically where it is literally life or death. So now you take that. And again, like, this is why I've studied this stuff. So I learned about motivational interviewing, acceptance, commitment therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy through the lens of how do I help people change? How do I bring this back to the gym? That was like, I was just reading motivational interviewing textbooks and things like that, trying to understand this stuff. But that's why these things are so important and interesting, because like, addicts are the highest level game that you can play this game at. Like, we're talking about behavior change in the gym, or again, with scrolling, or getting someone to do a morning routine. Like, that's fucking tiddlywinks compared to what addicts are going through. Like, this is real. This is real shit. That's where all these studies come from. Mm-hmm. But it's like that. So all we're doing is we're just looking at it through that lens. And like, that's where people are studying. No one's really studying the guy, is a cold plunge better for your morning routine, or is this? Like, that's just all anecdotal of like what people have found. The stuff that we're talking about is like, there have literally been papers on papers on papers of scientific studies of these things. So, but to take it back to your question, it's like, the reason that addicts can change like that is because they have to, right? Like, there's that old saying that it's like change happens when the pain of staying the same is worse than the pain of change. Mm-hmm. And that only happens with really hard shit. No matter how much you hate yourself, except for, or it doesn't, right? Like, someone who wants to lose weight, a lot of times people who lose a crazy amount of weight, it'll either because they're like, well, I knew I was going to die, or they're like, I hated myself so much that I hated the way that I was more than I hated however much it sucked doing the diet or something like that. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, that's my whole thing with this, is like, that's my whole goal, is like, I don't want it to have to take that long. I don't want you to have to hate yourself to like wait so long that you're only doing it because you hate yourself. It's like, if we could make it easier, then you don't have to wait until that very, very rock bottom moment. And we can actually get the thing in a way that feels good, and in a way that you actually keep it and it's sustainable. So that's the other thing about the addiction thing, and like the addicts making that change, is that it's an abrupt change that happens. A lot of these changes that people want in their life, when we talk about, again, these lower level changes, they're just like forever things, right? Mm-hmm. So meaning like, you know, people will be like, well, like going to the gym is a very easy example. It's like, you can go to the gym because you hate your body for, I don't know, 6 weeks, 6 months, mm-hmm. a year, like, but you have to go to the gym for the rest of your life. There's no, like, if you want to be healthy and active, and you're 30, 40 years old, you have another 30, 40, 50 years of exercise, because the human body degrades when you don't use it. And so if you want to have a higher quality of life for the rest of your life, you need to be exercising in some capacity. So you're telling me you're just going to hate yourself for the next 50, 60 years. And like, that's going to be the thing that motivates you. Like, it just doesn't make sense like that. So like, it's like this low, again, going back to that rocket fuel versus positivity barbecue versus analogy. The addiction thing is a very specific example because of the stakes that you're playing at.
Yeah. So I'm just interested if, in your work with changing behaviors, because I've struggled with anxiety. Obviously, I brought up ACT and therapy and all that. Now, one of the things that I've learned through my little anxiety recovery after I got sober was – the importance of neuroplasticity and how we create these pathways in our brain to have these super highways that have these automatic responses. And what I mean by that for people who don't know what that is for me with an anxiety disorder, when I see an elevator, because I have a phobia of elevators,
we're dying.
Yep. There we go.
We're going to die.
My amygdala fires and I get an adrenaline rush and I've trained my brain that elevators are dangerous, right? And whether it is or not, that's what I have trained. Now, in regards to every other behavior, I haven't looked into if those two things coincide. I imagine they do. Now, have you learned anything in regards to changing a behavior like going to the gym with creating new types of motivational thinking, recognizing old behaviors, creating new neural pathways? Is that a thing in your field, or is that just kind of like an anxiety-based deal?
No, 1000%. That's everything in life. That's literally everything. Your brain is just a prediction machine. So your brain only knows what's happened to it so far. Yep. And it assumes that what has happened to it so far is what will continue to happen to it. Mm-hmm. That's why we get traumatized by one thing and forever that thing traumatizes us again. Mm-hmm. That's why when something is very hard, we assume that it'll keep being very hard. But your brain also doesn't really understand what's going on. So that's it, right? Your brain is a prediction machine. So part B is, to be better at surviving, everything comes down to survival. Everything comes down to evolution. To be better at survival, your brain is always trying to conserve energy. To conserve energy, we get habits and routines, right? Habits are just a way that you don't have to think about something, right? If I get up, go make my coffee every morning, like I don't want to have to, like my brain, if I know I'm going to do that every single morning, doesn't want to have to waste energy on left foot, right foot, right hand, cup, K cup, ba, 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 ba. So it just, it runs a program. Right. So now it just kind of goes on an automatic program loop. So the more you do that program, the more ingrained it gets. Now, your brain is also always trying to conserve energy. So when you get up in the morning, it's always going to take the path of least resistance. And the path of least resistance is the path that has been taken over and over again. Think about it like after a big snowstorm. Right. You guys are from the Northeast. After a big snowstorm, you go out. The first time you go out in the snow, it's very hard to walk through. But the next time you go out, it's a little bit easier. And the next time you go out, it's a little bit easier. All of a sudden, there's a path carved in the snow. What are the chances that you're going to go and take a new path after that? Or are you just going to keep taking the same path that's already been beaten down? Yep. So that's what happens to your brain. It gets used to that one pathway. So to use alcohol as an example, I'm stressed. For stress relief, I go and get alcohol, drink alcohol. That becomes the loop. It's a habit loop. That becomes the loop of when I'm stressed, I get alcohol. Alcohol gives me relief. There's plenty of other ways that I can get stress relief, but because that's been the thing that I have done the most, that's going to be the easiest thing for me to do. The thing that's most salient in my brain, the thing that's most obvious and apparent for me.
That so now thing was carved deep, boy.
Right. So there's ways to break out of that, but the first thing is to just know that even when you start to break out of it, using that snow analogy from before, every time I try to carve a new trail in the snow, it's going to be harder than going down that old trail that's already carved out. Yep. And every time I open my door and I see the one trail that's been stomped down for 2 weeks and the one trail that's like fresh powder, I'm going to want to go to the easier trail because your brain always wants to save energy. Yep. So this is what you're up against in anything that you're stuck in. It's because being stuck to your brain is just a way to save energy, and it's a way that's smarter. It's like you used your elevator example. Your brain doesn't want to have to think every time you go into a new building, what's around here? Do I need to be on high alert? Do I need to be whatever? So it just put in a little box
trouble,
things to be scared of. Right,
that.
Exactly. Small boxes, things that are small boxes, scared. And then elevator goes into that box, like, oop, check. We don't need to even think about this anymore. Anxiety attack.
I'm pegging the stairs. Yeah, there we go.
Right. Yeah. Right. So like there's ways to get out of that. But the first thing comes to recognizing it and then to realizing you have to repattern. Like think about how long, like I just said, you have to tramp down that snow so many times. It's going to take that long or more to re-groove a new pattern in your brain.
I think it's so important. I love how it just, like you said, it's everything, right? It's everything. And when it comes to change, it is that simple, really. I mean, it's hard, but it's that simple. I think the thing that people are unaware of when it comes to trying to make those changes, as in, you know, forging a new path, I mean, you literally are forging a new path in your brain, is the uncomfortability that comes with that change, right? Because you want to go with the status quo, right? This is the certainty. This is what I know. This is what I do. This is how I roll, yada da yada da yada da yada da ya. And when you veer off into the unknown, you instantly, it may even make you anxious, right? Like, hey, fuck, if I go to the gym, if we use the gym as an analogy, right? I don't go to the gym. Are people going to judge me? Yada da ya. You can get in your head and create all these excuses because it's not the familiar path. It's something new. And the problem is if you're not firm in your resolve, then therefore you are just going to deviate right back to that old familiar behavior because it's warm, it's cozy, you know what the hell it is. And I struggled with that for a long time with my anxiety disorder. And I did it a long time with my drinking because that was how I dealt with everything. It was the long fucking narrow path, like Henry said, to darkness. But that's what I knew. And I think it's fantastic, man. I'm glad that you were able to reiterate, because I figured that was the case. Now, do you use that when you work with people? Do you tell them like, hey, this is kind of how this works on a physiological level, and that's why it's so hard to overcome these things?
Yes and no. I don't maybe break it down so deeply, but it's I do emphasize the point of like you're relearning everything. So it's like that, right? It's in the gym, you'll hear this a lot. People are like, well, it didn't take one salad, or I mean, one burger didn't make you fat, so one salad won't make you skinny, right? Like one workout won't do anything. And like, that's my whole thing. It's, you know, consistency, change made easy. The whole principle is that, like I just said, the brain always wants to save energy. Your brain, and anything that is more energy expensive than is harder than what is not, than what is less energy expensive. And that means anything that's not the status quo, anything that is change, anything that is different, is inherently harder than anything that is the status quo. Meaning by definition, what you have is easier than what you don't have because you have it already. And to get something that you don't have will take an extra outlay of energy, right? It's like what's in my capacity right now, I have. Anything outside of me, by definition, will take extra energy to go and get. Does that make sense? Yeah. So now if I take extra energy, that means it's hard. And that means my brain doesn't want to do it. So every single change, by definition, I'm fighting against my brain. I'm fighting against the survival mechanisms built into my very DNA. It's not even a brain that needs this. It's a DNA, because plants do this. Animals do this. Amoebas do this. Everything that has a living thing inside of it has a drive towards safety and security, and to save energy, because energy is the currency of life. So now anything that you want lies on the other side of change, and change always takes extra energy. So that means every time you're trying to create positive change in your life, it's running this algorithm of like, well, yeah, I want that thing, but also that thing is hard to get and I don't like to do hard things. So like, which is more important? And then you get into, what have you done for me lately? Like, meaning usually that change is good for you down the road. Right? Exercise is very good for me tomorrow. I get literally nothing except, as you said before, maybe you get some endorphins or something like that, but it's like, yeah, right. I mean, fuck that.
I'm here,
you
know, for that instant gratification.
Right, exactly. Right. Give me like, right. What is, and right now, although sitting on the couch and drinking beers will kill me 6 months later. From now, later, yeah. That's a problem for tomorrow, Paul. Right. And like, that's constantly the thing that we're running in our head. So like, that's the kind of thing that I try to explain to people. It's like, and that's why I'm so passionate about this stuff. It's like, this is not a you being broken thing. This is literally, you are fighting against the very programming inside of your DNA, because we were not built to live in this society. We were not built to have easy access to food, easy access to alcohol. The fact that the three of us are talking on a screen right now from thousands of miles away, like my brain can't comprehend that. To my brain, we're all sitting in the same room. Like, it doesn't make sense that that this would even be possible. So everything about the way that we live is against what the animal side of us is for. And that sets us up to lose. And that's the game that we're playing. So what I do in my coaching, what I do with my podcast, and what I do with my talk is just like, I'm just saying that. I'm laying out the rules. Because if you don't understand that, it's like you're playing Monopoly, but you've never read the rule book. And like, you're getting frustrated because you're not winning. It's like, you're not even playing the game. You're like, it's like, or like I used to play Super Nintendo. Like you guys are about my age, right? We play Super Nintendo when I was younger with my sister. She's older than me. And like, we're playing and I'm second controller playing on the bottom and like getting mad that I'm not doing it. And I look and the controller isn't even plugged in. You know, like I've just been like bouncing on the against the wall in Super Mario Kart because I was looking at the top screen, but I was playing on the bottom screen the whole time. Something like that. Like that's what's happening when you don't understand the rules of how this energy trade works. Like you're like, oh, it's just about willpower, it's just about motivation. It's like, no, like you're literally fighting the universe and it wants you to fail, and that's what you're up against. And that's okay, because you can succeed, and when you do, it's so amazing and it's so worth it. But it's not because you're broken, it's not because you're less than or you can't or there's anything wrong with you. It's like the game is rigged against you. Now let's figure it out.
Okay, well, that being said, we've talked a lot about the theory and the science and all that's been really cool. So what if our listeners are saying, Paul, where does the rubber meet the road? Where's the meat and potatoes? How do we put action to it? So if you could boil down, you know, how you get people intrinsically motivated, what are the steps? What's some action people can take to get on their new path?
Yeah. So, I mean, for one, it's like, no one can give you intrinsic motivation, right? That by definition, it's inside of you. So, right. But like, I take people through a checklist. So I call this the easier checklist. I literally made EA. It's an acronym, easier, right? I couldn't make it easier than that, right? Because that's my whole thing, easier. And this is like, if you want to start a new habit or a new routine or a new change, go through this checklist to see, is it something that I'm going to stick to? Because consistency wins all the time. We know that, right? It's like, you can try anything. If you do it for a week, it doesn't matter. If you do it for the rest of your life, you'll get results. So the easier checklist, E stands for enthusiasm. And that's where I start people. Are you enthusiastic, not about the end result, but are you enthusiastic about the daily action steps that you have to get there, right? Like, are you enthusiastic about not having a fit body, but are you enthusiastic about the gym that you're going to, about the diet that you're doing? Okay. A stands, I'll just run through these super quick. And if no anyone problem. Wants these, who's listening, I will give you this checklist as well. I have it as a freebie giveaway. A is for available. So is this available to you with your current restraints? So again, using the fitness analogy, people are like, well, I know I'm supposed to work out 5 days a week for an hour. It's like, okay, well, what's your schedule like? Well, I work two jobs and I have three kids. I'm like, well, then you can't do that. So you're setting yourself up for failure before you even start it. S stands for straightforward. Can you tell me in straightforward language how you're going to get from A to B, B to C, C all the way to Z? Because complexity is the killer of dreams, right? When people are like, yeah, I'm just going to do whatever it is. Like, I'm going to quit drinking, right? You could use that as an example. I'm going to quit drinking. Okay, how are you going to do that? Well, I'm just not going to drink anymore. What about family events? What about your partner who still does drink? Like, if you're not figuring out the nitty gritty details of all these things, you're not going to get there. So that's EAS. I is for imperfect. Imperfect is just perfection is impossible. So if you're not open to taking imperfect action means that like not only are you not going to be perfect, but you need to accept and expect that there are going to be speed bumps and hurdles along the way, that you are going to fuck up and you are going to fall off. And that's okay. That's part of it. Those are learning processes. You grow from that. So that's EASI. Second E stands for exponential. Exponential, this goes back to that intrinsic motivation piece a bit. It's like exponential is like, because of the energy thing I was saying before, you can't trade one for one. You can't go like, well, like if I work out, I get stronger. Everyone knows that and no one's working out. If I eat better, I get healthy. It's like, again, that's not enough for my brain. I need to give it so much reason to do the thing that it would be stupid for me not to. So if I work out, I get stronger and I also get endorphins and I come more prepared for my podcast and I also look better and I also can carry my kids farther. And I keep stacking those things till the one negative, which is like, I have to work out, which is hard, is weighed out by a 50 list thing of reasons that like benefits I get from working out. So again, using drinking as an analogy, it's like, well, I need to quit drinking because I'm going to die. It's like, well, clearly that's not enough for you because you've known that for years, but it's like, but also how it affects my mom, but also how it affects my job, but also how it affects my kids. But also it's like, and you start stacking these things and you remind yourself of that over and over and over. So that's EASIE. And the last R, easier, stands for repeatable. Can you do this? Not once. I don't care if you can do something once. Anyone can do something once. That does not impress me. Don't tell me you went to the gym once. It means nothing to me. Don't tell me you ate one healthy meal. Don't tell me like, it just like that doesn't matter. Can you do it forever? And specifically, not until you get the goal, right? So again, with something like alcohol, it's different because you're probably quitting forever. But for something like dieting or starting a business, it's not, oh, I can be on this diet until I lose the weight. I can wake up and grind until my business reaches $1 million or something like that. It's like, okay, and then what happens after that? Then you go back to being the person that you were before, and then you go back to the results that you had before. So if it's not repeatable forever, it's not a habit that's worth instilling. So that's the framework that I take people through. It's just like, before you even start, because otherwise what you're going to do is you're going to start, you're going to fall off of one of those pieces, and you're going to go have wasted 6 months. So it's like, rather than going through all that, I just take my clients through that right from the beginning. And we see, is this something that you're realistically going to stick with in the long term? Because if you stick with it in the long term, you will get the results.
I love that, man. That's a lot of good stuff. I think we'll definitely have a bunch of people checking out your show, because this is something that everyone struggles with. And one of the things I was thinking, when people talk to me about working out, I say, well, you just got to start going consistently and it won't be as hard. You won't get as sore and you'll enjoy it more, because I know that people like hate it. They think it sucks. That was so long ago for me that I don't remember that. But as we were talking about the neuroplasticity and the different channels, I've carved this fucking channel that says we go to the gym. We finish work and we go to the gym, and we like going to the gym three, four times a week, and we whatever. So it's just in there for me. I guess what I realize is that more than it'll just won't be as hard on your body, it's creating that new pathway. And you have to like act as if, all right, I'm a person who works out. I'm just going to work. You have to like let your actions guide you and just do it until it doesn't suck anymore. The other thing I loved was imperfect, because Cameron and I just talked. We had an episode on hobbies, and we said it doesn't matter if you suck at it. If you like doing it, if it feels good, if it's interesting to you, if it makes you happy, then that's all that matters. David didn't sit down his first day ever painting and paint the Sistine Chapel. He probably didn't paint it at all. I probably have the wrong guy, but you get what I'm saying. You know, he didn't sit down his very first day and carve that fucking perfect marble penis. So it takes time, you know, you have to work your way up to these things. So don't like start a task expecting I have to be the very best at this or I'm going to fucking quit. No, you're going to suck just like everyone else sucked at everything they did the first time. But it takes like continuing action in order for you to get to where you don't suck, and it doesn't suck for you mentally to make yourself do it.
Yeah, I'll go one step further. That's the whole thing about imperfect, right? It's like, one, perfection is impossible, right? But it's like, beyond that, you wouldn't want it if it was, right? It's like the hero's journey, right? The hero's journey is the story, the archetypal story that we all know. It's like Han Solo, Luke Skywalker, his parents die, he goes on the thing, or like Harry Potter, whatever. It's the same story, but it's like the hero's journey, part of it is the fall from grace. No one wants to hear the story of guy has everything, guy keeps everything, guy finishes with everything. Guy has girl, girl never leaves. They have a bunch of kids. Like, no one watches that movie. No one buys that book. No one wants to hear that story. It's not interesting. If you were great at a sport, if you're perfect at a sport, if you're the best basketball player in the world, it would be boring. Like the concept of flow, right? There's the concept of flow where like you're in your peak flow state. And then to be in flow, it takes a level of challenge. So in the book Flow, the author Mikkel Csikszentmihalyi or something like that talks about like, if you're a tennis player, if you're really good at tennis and you're playing a third grader, it's not going to be fun for you. You're not going to be able to find flow. But also if you're playing someone that's too good for you and they're just beating you all the time, you're not going to be able to find flow. And if you're playing too well and you're playing against people that aren't as good as you, you're not going to be able to find flow. So if you're just so good at everything and you're perfect and everything just happens for you, it's like that life isn't worth living either. The benefits that we get from things come from the struggle. Like it's cliche and people don't like hearing this, like it's the journey, not the destination, but that's the literal truth. Climbing Mount Everest is a crazy thing to do because of the climb. If you took a helicopter to the top of Mount Everest, it doesn't mean anything. Cool. No one gives a shit. So like it's the same thing with abs. It's the same thing with anything. Why do people look at guys with abs and think that they want abs? It's not because of how they look. It's because of the fact that they know they had to work to get there. And then you see a guy with abs, and then someone goes, oh, he went to Dr. Miami and he got the implants. And you go, oh, fuck that guy. Like it's Drake, instant. BBL, we don't Drake. Like the, right. Exactly. we don't like those people. So it's like, the thing about being imperfect is that like, it's not even something, it's like, okay, you have to be okay with messing up. It's like, you have to seek it. Like you, like that's so much a part of the process that like you should be looking for it, because you're like, oh, every time I mess up, that means I'm getting a little bit better.
That's super true, man. And there's a thing that we say. I mean, obviously it's super dangerous for people like us in our community, but relapse is a part of recovery, right? So when you're talking about falling off the horse, it's very important that we first and foremost get back on the horse. But it's kind of what you were just saying. It's what did we learn when we fell off the wagon, right? What was that struggle? What were those challenges that I wasn't willing to face head on? Right. And why did I deviate back to this old way? Why did I do this? I do love the rags to riches analogy, right? Because it's super true. Nobody gives a shit that somebody was fed with a silver spoon their whole life and had this fantastic life. Like I still have the hardest time ever understanding why anybody wants to watch the goddamn Kardashians. Like, why do we care about this? Like, and there's a prime example of that. It's like just these rich people who do whatever the fuck they want for doing nothing, and nobody cares. But I guess everybody cares at the same time. But it's silly, right? But there's so much more satisfaction when you can sit back and look in terms of somebody who was obese and worked their ass off to go and change their lives. Or you see somebody living on the street slamming heroin, and now they have a family and a kids and they own a house and all that. And that in itself is enough intrinsic motivation for a lot of people. We have another saying in the program, at least in AA, it's attraction rather than promotion, right? Like, I don't need to come around you and tell you, hey, you got to do this, 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 and this. You can just look and see me and how I operate. And that is enough motivation in itself, because I personally saw people who were effectively living sober lives, and you want it inside. Now, did that flip the switch? No, but it planted the seed. Right. And that's all it really takes. At least it did for me. Right. Because it set this standard. There was this thing. Hey, there's an easier way to do this, or there's a way. I know it's going to be fucking hard. I'm not ready to do it yet. But there it is. It's that climb. The obstacle is the path. That's another one of my Zen Buddhist quotes that I really like. And it's so true, man. So true.
So I'll say that one of my greatest triumphs, and the thing that I appreciate most about recovery, has been the self-confidence and being comfortable being myself and comfortable in my own skin, because I wasn't before. And obviously that's part of why I would use, because I wanted to loosen up, because I was anxious, because whatever. And it's the thing I'm most grateful for, because I don't worry as much. I'm not perfect at it, but I don't worry as much what people think about me or what someone's, you know, whatever. So I heard you talking about self-confidence on another one of the shows, and that you had some very interesting points about believing. It's about self-belief and some of the things that you do to throw off your self-confidence because you don't follow through and think. So I wondered if you could touch on that a little bit. And how do you help people build self-confidence?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, to me, self-confidence is everything. It's because, you know, again, like when I was a trainer, when I was doing coach, all different types of coaching, it's like, okay, well, what do you want from this, right? Going back to intrinsic motivation. I want to lose weight. But why do you want to lose weight? Well, I'll feel better. Okay. And then why do you want to feel better? And if you keep peeling back that onion, it's like, so I can be more confident. I want to look better so I can be more confident on the beach. I want to be able to talk to girls. I want to do it. But it's like everything boils down to confidence. Like we want to be able to show up confidently in our lives. And when you can show up confidently, it feels good. Like you just said, you are more confident now. And that's one of the biggest things you got out of your sobriety. But the way I teach confidence, or the way I think about confidence, is that it's about trusting yourself, right? The Latin term confidere is literally trust. And the way that I think about that, it's not about like, am I confident in my looks? Am I confident in my whatever? It's like, am I confident in my ability to be okay? Do I trust myself that no matter what life throws at me, I will figure it out? That is true confidence, because then I can do anything. If I know that I have confidence in myself that no matter what life throws at me, if I lose it all tomorrow, if I get lost, if my car breaks down, if my phone dies, if all of these different things, that I'm going to be okay, I'm going to figure it out, then I can do anything. Because no matter what happens, I'll figure it out. Yeah. That is confidence. I can go up and talk to the girl. I can apply for the job. I can raise my hand in that meeting when they say, hey, anyone have any comments? And everyone, I know everyone has a goddamn comment, but no one's putting their hand up. But I can put my hand up because I'm like, if these guys fire me, fuck them. I'm going to be okay.
Yeah.
Like that is, it to me, is what confidence is. So the reason I think that's so important is because so many people are seeking that confidence from external measures. Oh, when I look a certain way, people will look at me like this, then I can be confident. Oh, when I have the amount of money, then I will be more confident. It's like, no, confidence starts from within. It starts by trusting yourself. And the way you do that is by building up undeniable evidence that you will be okay. And that comes from doing hard things. And that comes from putting yourself in those positions and then following up and showing up for yourself. And when you do that enough times, your brain, again, going back to what I said before, all your brain knows is a pattern. It knows what's happened before is what will happen. So if you're always the person who sets goals and then doesn't do them, you can't be confident because your brain is going to go, well, I'm a liar. Every time I say I'm going to do something, I don't do it. I don't show up. But now you flip that and you start being the person who shows up for yourself one time, two times, three times, 10 times, 1,000 times. And on the 1,001st time, you can say whatever you want. You can say, I'm going to fly tomorrow. And your brain is going to believe you because you've given it evidence that it will. And that's real confidence to me.
Hell yeah.
I love that approach. It's a completely different approach, but I love how you broke that down. The thing for me, we talk about in recovery all the time that it's like a self-obsessed disease. So the thing that helped me a lot was I had to go, first of all, nobody cares. All these people that I think are, oh my God, look at Henry. Oh, what's Henry doing? Oh, they don't, because they're self-obsessed too. And they're worried about themselves and they have their own stress and their own life and their own bullshit going on that they're not super concerned about what I'm doing. Like I think they are, like I've made up that I have to put on this show because they're so fucking worried. They're not. And then the second half of that and the other side is if they do care, I don't care that they care. Go home and tell your girlfriend that I look stupid dancing. Go home and say how ugly. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me because, like you said, I don't get that confidence extrinsically. I get it because I like who I am. And that was really hard for us when we were drinking and using because we looked in the mirror and told ourselves we were pieces of shit. But once we started to love ourselves, which was hard to learn to do, but you learn after other people love you and after, like you said, you prove to yourself, oh, wow, it's been 365 days and I haven't had a drink of alcohol. I'm pretty cool. I can do this stuff. I do things. I stick to stuff, you know. I love that. Some really good stuff in there. And this leads into the question, this is my selfish question, because though I know all this stuff and I have this self-confidence, I suffer from ADHD and what I would say is minor levels of depression and anxiety, and I get very, very bad task-based paralysis, and by that I mean like, okay, I should fold the laundry and do the dishes and fix the locks on my truck because my truck won't lock and there's expensive tools in there. This is a real fucking situation that's happening. My truck won't lock. There's tools in there. I should probably fix that so like my very expensive tools don't. Well, my truck locks still don't work. And I think about all this stuff I have to do and guess what I do? Nothing, because it's all too much. And I get like, it's this, I fucking freeze, man. And I hate it. I'm like, God, just do the one thing, do something. I have so much trouble with that. So do you have any experience, strength, and hope on that?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say I'm not an expert in, neurodivergence and that type of thing. It's funny. My girlfriend is actually a coach who works with ADHD and stuff. So I learned a lot from her.
Sign me but, up.
I'll connect you guys. But I will say, so you said it right there in the beginning. You said, I have, what did you say? I should fix my car and I should do the laundry, blah, blah, blah. It's like that word is should.
Should.
I don't allow that word to exist because there's no such thing as should. There is do or there's don't. If you like, you say I should it, like, but you didn't. So then you shouldn't because you didn't. Like there only is what you did. So like there is should does not exist. Should only sets us up for disappointment because what a should is saying there's something that I'm saying I need to do, but I'm not going to do. So I don't allow this is one of the first things I work with clients on. It's like, we remove the word should, because nothing should doesn't exist. Should is a self-imposed thing. Like, it's like, well, I really should fix my car, the lock on my car, to use it, like you just said. It's like, well, clearly not, because you're sitting right here and you're not outside fixing it right now, right? Like, if you really should, you would have
currently pilfering my truck,
right? Exactly. And that's okay. Like, apparently that, like, you're like, well, like, if I don't, then someone could steal from my truck. I'd like, and once again, if that were enough to get you to do it, you would have done it, but you aren't. And that's okay. That's a decision. You're allowed to make any decision you want. You could say there's a lot of dishes in the sink, then those dishes do need to get done, but I'm not going to do them right now. Like, that's an adult decision. That's being in control. Should is just an excuse that placates you. It's like the same word, same thing as like being lazy. It's like, oh, well, I need to, I'm just being lazy. It's like, that doesn't do anything. Just say, I'm not going to do it right now, and I'll do it tomorrow. And that's okay. And just say that I said I was going to do it tomorrow and I'm still not doing it today. That's okay. It puts the onus on you. When we have this like, when we have the shoulds, when we have these, we have excuses, when we use words like laziness, all these different things, it's like, what that does is that passes the buck. It's like, well, I would, but I'm just lazy. I really should, but it's like, no, it's like everything that you do is a decision. There only is do or don't. Yep. There only is yes or no. There are no in-betweens, and it's okay to do that. But usually once you say that, when you say, I'm choosing to leave my car unlocked overnight, either you have to be okay with it, A, or B, it's going to bring you to a level of cognitive dissonance where you can't sit with it and you're going to go, fuck it, I guess I'm going to go fix my goddamn car. And that's it. It only gives you two choices. So you either, you're okay with it, and then you're okay with it, and that's fine. You're allowed to be okay with it. No one is imposing these shoulds on you except for you. And if you're not okay with it, then you do the thing, and then it's not on your to-do list anymore. But like the very word of should, or it's the same thing with results. Well, I should have gotten this result by now from my diet, from my business. Like, but you didn't. So clearly you shouldn't have, because all you get is what you get. Right. So it's like, well, I was supposed to, I've been working so hard. My podcast should have had this many downloads by now. How many downloads does it have? This many. Well, that's how many it should have, because that's how many it does have. And it's just like, we use these words that like trick us into a false sense of security, right? It's like that doesn't exist. So I literally,
so
if
how
I can,
do we get to the action?
Well, again, so, like I said, you take that word away, and then you don't have to get to the action. If you're choosing not to get to the action, that's okay. Like, let's say you're assuming that you're supposed to get to that action. And if you were, you
I
would.
I am supposed to get to that action.
But clearly not. Right? Like, if you were supposed to, you would have done it already. Clearly, the very fact that it's not happening shows you that you're not supposed to. Nothing's going to happen. The sky isn't falling. You're okay. Now, again, like, you could sit and be upset about it and hold those to that dissonance of like, well, I'm supposed to, but I'm not doing it. Or you could just say like, I'm okay not doing it. Or you could say, I'm going to get up and do it. Like, those are two, like, it's pick a lane, right? It's like, don't sit in the middle and beat yourself up over not choosing one. Choose one. Realize that there are no grades in this. Again, they're only, so you're saying I'm supposed to, I should, like, who's like, you're the one imposing those things on you, and realize that you can choose whatever you want and there's no right choice, but then make a choice and then stick with it. That's, I mean, that's the best advice I can give.
He would like Randall Brown, huh?
Dude, him and Randall.
Our boy Randall Brown does not fuck with try.
I listened to him on your podcast. It was amazing. Yeah, I do love that guy.
Yeah, everybody does, man. He
trying ain't doing. Right. Trying is bullshit. When you was trying to quit drinking, was you quitting?
Right.
No, exactly. You was still drinking.
Right. Yeah, and so, dude, those are great examples, right? Like, you've somehow, like the truck example, right? You've somehow gained this willful tolerance of the risk that brings.
If I lived in Sacramento still, I would have had to fix the locks day of.
Straight
but
up.
I live in God's country, the rolling hills of West Virginia.
That's it.
Where crime isn't such a bad thing. Now somebody's going to be driving around looking for my truck.
Hey, I'm flying out right now, dude. I know it's all Milwaukee in there, too. Anyways, in the famous words of Neil Peart, I believe, right? Even if you choose not to make a choice, or what the hell is it? You still have
made a choice.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we've kept you along, Paul. Let's ask one final question for you, brother.
Two.
Oh, we got two. So I'll ask this one. What would you tell someone who's struggling to achieve their goals right now? It can be short. What would you tell somebody?
To make it easier. If you're struggling to achieve your goals, that means it's too hard, just by definition. So chunk it down, break it down smaller and smaller and smaller until you're not struggling anymore.
Yeah. Perfect. Mm. Perfect.
Love that.
Succinct.
And then, these are our two questions we ask all of our guests. The last one being, what is your favorite part about cutting out alcohol?
it's not being hungover anymore. 1,000%. That's probably if I had to, like, if I could drink without being hungover, there's a good chance that I would drink more. It's right. The fact that one night of drinking now takes away 3 days of living for me. It's not like, like my hangovers. If I drink on a Friday night, I'm hungover probably till Monday. So just having that back, it's like that. I look at everything as an equation. It's like that. It's not worth the trade-off for me. Even losing in that night is like one thing, but you know, just I just feel better physically. I want to do more things. Like I said, I'll wake up on a Friday morning. Every Saturday morning, I go to a buddy's house and we do a group workout at 8 a.m., jump in the cold plunge, and then we all have breakfast together. It's like there's no chance that I was doing that if I went out on a Friday night. So it gives me back more life. It's not about the Friday night. It's about what I get back over the weekend when I'm not drinking.
Yep. Return on investment, my man. The juice is not worth the squeeze. Well, I'm glad that you're on the path, man. And I know you, like I said, it's not full abstinence, but it sounds like it's few and far in between, dude. I just want to say thank you for coming on, man. This was a very insightful conversation. You have a lot of very good things to say. And how about you plug your podcast one more time, man, so our listeners can come and follow you? Because that's some really good stuff, dude. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, for sure. I would love that. It's just Change Made Easy. Right. It's pretty easy. Change Made Easy on all podcast platforms. And that's the number one place. I've over 300 episodes. So go dig into that. Cool. And if you want to connect with me on any social media platforms, it's just my name at Paul Levitin across all platforms. And I'd be happy to point you in a direction if I could help with anything.
And that's Paul Levitin. And we will put some links down in the comments. Yeah, man, I want to thank you. I think this episode will bring a lot of value to our listeners. I'm really glad we have you on. And I think we could talk for another 3 hours. So I think we'll definitely have you back sometime. And thanks again for coming on, man.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed this conversation.
All right, Paul. Hey, have a good time, man. And we'll see you on the other side, brother.
Thanks, man.
That guy was good, dude. That guy was good. It was,
dude, the best part, and I wanted to describe this to the listener, but I've been listening to his stuff to kind of research before we prepared.
Yeah, I listened to a few of his shit.
And you picture this, and I don't want to put him down at all, but in my mind, I'm picturing this polished guy in his three-piece suit with like a tie. And what we were looking at, for those of you who are just listening, is this dude, he's got tattoos, he's in a tank top, he's just a dude, he's just a bro, like one of us.
Yeah.
But he speaks like this very polished, you know, he's so intelligent and so polished. So there was like, I guess what I'm saying is there's this like cognitive dissonance between who I'm looking at and what I've been hearing without seeing him, you know.
Yeah, dude, he looks like I've been calling him Nick Hine all week because he looks like one of my buddies, Nick Hine. So it was kind of nice sitting there talking with him. Yeah, just a cool dude, man. And he really was fantastic, man. Very lucid, very transparent. Had a very good outlook on things. I love his take on should, right? That's a word I use all the time, and it can cripple me, man. It, you know, that was towards the end of the episode, but you know, I should. Guess what, Henry? For all our longtime listeners, that fence in my backyard is still standing. All right.
Brother.
So I still haven't got that down. I still haven't got it done. Right. So that's me saying I should get it done. And I'm not. And it comes down to that willful tolerance. Right. Like, I guess I'm OK with that fence still standing there.
Yeah, it is. Hey, check this out. I've been in West Virginia since December of 2017. I just got the first West Virginia license plate. And not only that, but the first legal vehicle that I've had since I've been here. I was driving the Ford, old Ford, on Cali plates and 19 tags since 2019.
Holy shit, dude. Dude, I'll tell you this. Pop a C, dude. My dad would pop a fucking artery if he knew you were doing that, dude. Something about back tags gets him fired up, dude. He'll walk up to your car and be like, your registration's going to be out next month. Be like, hey, DMV guy, I fucking know, dude. Are you paying the bill? Like, what are you talking about?
Do you know why? Because fuck them, that's why. And because also... Yeah, because fuck them and their taxes. They can suck my whole thing. But anyway, also, if it was bad enough, like our buddy said, I would have fixed it. But my car hasn't been towed and I haven't, you know, I've been pulled over, but they were like, you should get that registered, whatever. Knock on wood, because I'm going to have that shit towed the next time I drove it. Now I'm over here rubbing it in the universe's face and shit. But the Raptor is legal. Okay. The Raptor is my first legal vehicle in West Virginia. My first, we have to get inspection stickers here. I just got my first inspection sticker ever in fucking 6 years.
Dude, that is wild. Hey, I'm just curious. What do the license plates look like out there?
They got a little gold and blue.
Oh, I was hoping
it was nothing super cool.
Okay, I was hoping it was going to be like John Denver's fucking face or something, dude. I'm super disappointed. Well, dude, I think this was a fantastic fucking episode. Good pull, Hen. Henry snagged this guest. He's been going hard in these podcast groups. That's really great. Make sure you guys go and follow Paul and, you know, hit him up, because that easier method is actually pretty snazzy. I missed the first part because my fucking dog came in.
Dude,
so
for the listener, Cameron like was doing like a kicking motion, had to take his headphones off, tripped over his chair. It was like, and this dude's sitting here going through the easier, and I'm trying to keep a straight face like I'm paying attention. I'm looking at Cameron over here, fucking falling all over the place and shit.
Fuck, dude, I guess I didn't have the door shut all the way, dude. Ash is out there with the kids. And she's taking a piss, and all of a sudden the door just busts open. I thought it was Ashley. And
I was like, Cameron's over here kicking his baby. Oh, no.
Dude, I'm like, oh, hey, Ash is opening the door. I wonder what's going on. The house must be on fire or something. And here comes fucking Rudy, comes sauntering in here happy as hell. So
rude ass.
Oh, dude. Well, hey, it's your week since you wanted to do it. So in this week's segment of Creerun's Quotes, it is Henrin's Quotes. What do you got for him this week, pal?
Putting your boy on the spot. Okay, so I heard this actually on another podcast, and it just stabbed me right in my heart sack.
The heart sack.
There are too many people in the world today who decide to live disappointed rather than risk feeling disappointment.
Dude, that is gas, dude.
And how perfect is that for our episode?
Tied in.
You are living in that disappointment. You are living disappointed because you're afraid, like your example with the working out. Oh, well, what if people judge me? Or what if people, because you're afraid of, or what if it's hard? Or you're afraid of, oh, I don't know if I could change my job. Maybe they'll say no. Or, you know, you're afraid of that. But you're unhappy currently with where you are. So pick your disappointment. Yep. The worst they can say is no. The worst that can happen from staying the same is that you're super fucking bummed and you hate your life and you rest in that disappointment.
Yep, yep. And it's that risk taking, right? It's that that really does tie into this whole episode, right? It's staying with the familiar, with those pathways, right? Like, hey, there's this. And if I try that, like I tried the other things that I failed at, I'm just going to be disappointed. So I'm just going to stay. I'm going to stay here in disappointment land. Great quote, dude. Great quote, man. Next week, we have a loaded week. We will be on, what is it, Real Men Hug? Or what's that show called?
Oh, that's right. Yep. Yep, we're going to do that, but we'll still obviously have our own show. Yep. And we haven't talked about it yet, but I would like to have some fun next week. Okay. I'd like to lighten the mood again and get a little frisky with some new segments and have some fun with the
people. Let's bring them next week. Let's do a fun lunch, a Cam and Hen exclusive. Okay. Let's do a fun lunch next week. That sounds great, actually.
We'll catch up on, you know, we had two guests in a row. When we do that, we like to get back to our roots and just me and you chopping it up. So we'll have some topic based stuff. We'll catch up on some stuff we haven't covered, and then we'll have some fun.
Sounds good, dude. What a week. What an episode though, man. That was great. So follow us on Instagram this week. Do that for us, please. Rude Dude Pod, all one word. And I'm still back to saying that. Anything else we got this week before I finish it off, Hen?
I don't think so, man.
All right.
I think we covered
it. All right, cool. I want to thank Paul again. Fantastic episode. Thanks for coming on, brother. I will finish it like I always do. I love you, Hen.
I love you too, Cam. And remember, cut that shoulda, coulda, woulda bullshit and the word why out of your vocabulary and give yourself evidence that you will do what you say you do so you can be like, fuck what they think.
And if you're in the West Virginia area, go and steal Henry's tools.
Later, man. I'm an MC with the music and hearing. I'm an upbeat and boy, the hoo.